The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
The information and ideas provided within this show are intended for educational purposes only and not intended as investment advice. The hosts of this show do not provide tax or legal advice. You should consult with your tax or legal professional regarding your individual situation. No information should be interpreted as securities advice. With regard to your particular investments and financial strategies, consult your financial planner, CPA, and investment professionals. While we have endeavored to ensure the accuracy of the information in this program, we do not guarantee or give any warranty as to the accuracy, timeliness, or completeness of any information. The process of buying and selling a business can be frightening for the parties involved. What paperwork is needed? What is the true market value of the business? How do you know what transactions are required to be processed in addition to the sale of the business? Welcome to Biz Broker Talk, where you'll find the answers to these questions and much more. Your hosts, Robert Howells and Doug Scheiding, have a decade of experience providing business broker services to large and small businesses. Today, they're ready to help you. Here's Robert and Doug.
Welcome to Biz Broker Talk with Robert Howells and
Doug Scheiding.
We're owners of Business Brokers of San Antonio and Equipment Appraisers of San Antonio, and today we're going to talk about the preparing your business for sale. This show is pre-recorded for Christmas Eve, so please do not call in. Today we're going to discuss timing and risk factors involved with preparing a business for sale, as well as review some management issues that most owners may face. We're going to examine financials and recasting and talk about types of business valuations that may be needed for the transaction. And we'll also consider why this is all important. And time permitting, we'll talk about the selecting of a business broker. Let's begin by talking about timing. Doug?
Typically, an owner of a business needs to start thinking about preparing their business for sale. And we like to think 1 to 3 years in advance.
Yeah.
The perfect example is the dry cleaner that you spoke to at least, 2 years in advance?
2.5 years to get it prepared for sale.
And so I think the business owner needs to consider this, because what happens is the last thing you want is a kind of a distress sale where you need to sell within 6 months, et cetera.
Need to sell or have to sell.
And you haven't really done the planning necessary that goes into fixing the financials and all the other things that we're going to talk about this evening. So typically it's going to take 4 to 6 months or maybe even several years to sell. I think actually Frank in our office has the record at 28 days from the listing agreement to actual closing. That's incredibly fast, but on average it takes about 185 days.
That's industry-wide.
Yes.
It's industry-wide, it's about a half a year.
Half a year. And that's for a business that's priced right and where you're not aggressively pricing it, trying to get a premium. But in some cases, it may take a couple of years, especially if it's a unique or limited buyer pool type of business.
Right.
The owner needs to keep your foot on the gas pedal, as you say. What is it that you say?
You got to look, run your business like you're going to give it to your grandkids, and not do like some have done and list the business and go on vacation.
Yeah, the owner needs to keep their foot on the gas pedal, keep running the business, do not let up. Because what happens is that you're representing certain financial performance of the business, and if as soon as you list the business and think it's going to sell within a few months, then revenue starts to drop, and then if a buyer starts getting in and looking at monthly financials after listing, then they'll see that the business is going down.
Yeah, I think the number one, but a common question that we get from owners is during the listing agreement is, what should I do? It's a lease, it's vendor relations, it's hiring, and we continue to tell them you need to run the business as if you're gonna continue running for years. You need to make long-term decisions that are good for the business, as if you're going to be inheriting that income in the down the road.
Absolutely, because the truth of the matter is, the business may not sell for a variety of reasons.
Yeah, could be lender, could be franchisor, could be landlord, could be parties just couldn't get together. I mean, just because a deal even gets under contract, there's no guarantee of closing.
or it could even be your broker, because some brokerages out there, they like to list businesses and don't do as much as proactively in terms of trying to sell the business. So, you need to be careful about which broker you choose. So, flat is the new up. I think I heard that from a lender of all places. Yep. But given the economic uncertainty and the downturn that we've had the last couple of years, if your business is flat, that is the new up.
But that's a good thing.
Know your tax consequences. A great example of this is last year, where the capital gains was at 15%. That was expiring. And from a seller standpoint, that had significant impact on what the seller actually put into their pocket at the end of the day.
Yeah, I think along with that is, we will not list a business until we have in writing from the seller that they have met with their tax advisor and understand the tax implications. That's such a significant issue is people don't have been running their business for 20 or 30 years and they're used to seeing how much they've been paying in taxes. And the year that they sell that business, when they go to pay the taxes, it can have a significantly different tax consequence than what they're used to seeing.
Because from a seller perspective and an owner, if you sell your business for $1 million, you're not going to put $1 million in your pocket. There's Uncle Sam, there's closing fees and brokerage fees.
Yeah.
So if $1 million is what you need to retire on, then you need to understand what the tax consequences are, and it needs to sell for 1.3 or 1.4.
Correct. I mean, if you have liens against some of the assets that are transferring, or you have a line of credit that has to be closed out, that's all subtracted from the purchase price.
That's a very good point, because in our transactions, the business needs to sell free and clear as part of an asset sale. So if you get to keep the accounts receivable, but the liens that are on your equipment, lines of credit, bank notes, etc., that needs to be paid at closing.
Yeah, there's no reason to try to pay them down prior to. We've had clients that have reduced their net income the year before listing, thinking they're doing a good thing by making their balance sheet look better. But what it did is it ended up showing that they were making less in the business. So it's not always a good thing to talk to your broker before you start making any substantial change to how you run your business. Probably also an issue that you touched on was changing C corporations. I'll never forget the conversation I had with a accountant who had his client as a C corp for over 20 years, and when the business went to sale, they started recognizing that they could have changed it to an S corp and not had double taxation. And it was almost as if the accountant thought that this business was going to be run in perpetuity, or somebody was going to buy it via stock transaction. And why don't you talk a little bit about the C to an S?
Well, the C corp, you briefly mentioned it, the double taxation. It's taxed. The S corp is a pass through in terms of income, and the C corp is taxed both at the individual level as well as the corporate level. So when you go to sell, there are taxes both at both levels, individually as well as corporately. And again, talk to your CPA or financial planner, but that goes into your tax consequences and preparation in the sale of your business.
And stay away from the dismal D's.
Actually, I took these from John Denny's book because there's a couple of extra ones in here, but just kind of going through them. Declining sales, dissension, disinterest, distraction, debt, divorce, disease, disability, and death.
Those are not the calls brokers like to get when any of those things have occurred or are occurring. A distressed business that's in the dismal D's, the time element has been shortened dramatically in getting the business sold. And you're not always going to get a good market rate for the business at that point. Great buyer scenario, but not great for the seller. Could be great for the buyer.
Well, now you want to move on to reducing risk?
Well, there's perceived buyer risk, and when you have perceived buyer risk, that lowers the value in the eyes of the buyer, and there's so many types of perceived buyer risk. I think there's two primary ones that we see. The first is employees, that they're concerned that the employee is going to run out the door when they find out the business is being sold or is sold. You know, that's a discussion that the seller needs to be done with the seller to understand the motivation of the employees. Most employees need a job, and most employees have been working in a business for a period of time, seemingly enjoy that employment. And the over 200 transactions we've done, I can only think of a handful where there's been an exodus of employees, and it was for egregious reasons. So, I mean, employee the perceived risk by the buyer of the employees is something that can be addressed by the seller by having a non-compete or an employee agreement with the key employees of the business. And then there's also the customer concentration. You know, you don't want to have lenders don't like to see customer concentration over 20%, but majority of your revenue is not coming from one customer more than 20% of the revenue.
Yeah, either the top three, top five, top 10, depends on who you ask. But I think from the standpoint of customer concentration, if you had one customer that was over 20%, that is certainly a risk. If, for example, if the owner has been friends with that person, invites them deer hunting and over to their...
It's a social event.
Yeah, social events, Christmas parties, etc., that's a relationship that may not be able to be replicated by a new buyer. So that's a risk factor for the buyer and owner to consider. And risk is really very similar to interest rates from the standpoint of if an investment is riskier, you've got a higher interest rate. So a buyer is looking at it in the same way from a return on investment.
There are several ways to remedy there's usually more than one way to remedy the perceived risk of the buyers once those have been identified, and it usually takes a third party like a broker to review the business to identify some of the potential risks that are out there.
But as a business owner, if you've got a customer concentration risk, you need to broaden your customers and find an additional new business.
Multiple revenue sources.
That goes along the same. You need to keep your eye on your core business, but if you've got multiple revenue sources, maybe some maybe more a little insulated from economic downturns than others, and where some may go up and some may go down depending on the economy.
We're still seeing businesses that are retail or even wholesale that still don't have a website or aren't doing any e-commerce. I mean, to say, yeah, it's a business, that's an opportunity for the buyer is one thing, but a seller could potentially get more for their business should they set that up and either have an eBay account or work with Amazon or have their own e-commerce site whereby that's already, even if it's just an outline, you just have one product on it, that you have some semblance and show of revenue from an additional source is beneficial. And having backup vendors, you know, having a sole source has always been a risk in manufacturing. And
absolutely. I've got one business listing right now where one of the vendors is 40% of the retail sales for that particular business. And that's a risk because there isn't a backup vendor for the business owner.
And a real risk is having systems in place to manage cash, particularly concerning retail businesses, restaurants and bars, and general retail where you have cash in place. Very basically having some policies, procedures that are written policies and procedures that employees have signed off to, and things such as, you know, employees handling of cash, that, you know, they're certainly not going to be the ones making deposits. There needs to be checks and balances two or three times throughout your business process.
Small businesses are very apt to be susceptible to employee fraud and stealing from the business. In fact, we know of a recent business that that just went through that a couple of years ago, where the employee stole some money from the business.
$700,000. We went to a Risk Management Association meeting earlier in the year that was hosted by two FBI agents, and it was very pronounced, the profile of the perpetrator. It's usually a female between 35 and 55 that takes in the mail, is a trusted key employee, and has access to the bank account or check writing ability.
As well as depositing cash. Personally, I like to see, depending on the business, whether the security cameras are live or not. I like to see security cameras, and the employees don't know if they're being watched or not. Are you the business? Basically, when the business goes home, when you also go home, and I think from the standpoint of having other people involved in the business, having other business relationships, in terms of going out and marketing and doing the sales, it needs to be a variety of people.
Yeah, I mean, another way of saying it is you don't want to be the chief cook and bottle washer of your business.
That's good, yes.
You've got to work on the business, not in the business. If you are in the cottage industry and you are the one that is managing all aspects of the business, that is why we say it needs to be a couple of years for you to get someone in there that's qualified and trained to start taking ownership and having some type of compensation that's measurable and meaningful to manage that employee or employees, so that you're not the chief cook and bottle washer. You're actually working on the business. And don't make big changes. You know, if you make a dramatic change to the business, it has to have time to facilitate itself in your financials, have a track record a year or more before you can show that that's been beneficial or not. We're going to take a break now. When we come back, we're going to finish up reducing risk by talking about leases, and then we're going to talk about management of your business.
Business brokerage is a very regional business due to the requirement of having face-to-face buyer and seller meetings. While Robert and Doug are regionally centric to South Central Texas with their brokerage company, Business Brokers of San Antonio, and their equipment appraisal company, Equipment Appraisers of San Antonio, they have also established BizBrokerTalk.com to help assist sellers and buyers with finding professionals in a variety of areas required in the business transaction process. This includes certified business brokers, SBA loan packagers, 401k conversion companies, lenders, as well as other necessary advisory sources. Whether you're selling or buying a business, you need a team of professionals on your side to guide you through the process. Visit BizBrokerTalk.com today. And if you're in the South Texas area, please visit Business Brokers of San Antonio at BBOfSA.com or Equipment Appraisers of San Antonio at EAOfSA.com. Today, enterprise technology is both strategic and global. Each week on CIO Talk Radio, IT thought leaders from around the world share their experiences with listeners as they discuss with Sunjog All how they are trimming costs and partnering with business to innovate and help IT become more competitive. This means better care for customers and improves the corporate bottom line. If you want to keep up with IT thought leadership, listen to CIO Talk Radio with Sunjog All every Wednesday at 7 a.m. Pacific Time, 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel, the bottom line in business talk.
Health costs companies a lot more than just benefits, premiums, and health plans. Think about the underlying cost with not having healthy employees in the program, investing in the future. Creating Wealth Through Health, host Susan Doherty will discuss employee wellness programs, how staying healthy affects the bottom line, and how to get your team engaged in better health as a way of life. Tune in every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific Time, 6 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel.
This is BizBroker Talk with Robert Howells and Doug Scheiding. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or you may send an email to podcast@bizbrokertalk.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Biz Broker Talk with Robert Howells and Doug Scheiding. We're talking about reducing risk. And if you have questions, please email them to podcast@bizbrokertalk.com. That's podcast@bizbrokertalk.com. Or visit our website at www.bizbrokertalk.com. We're talking about reducing risk in preparation of the sale of a business. And we're talking specifically about not making major changes, and probably one of the most common changes that could happen in a business is the lease. If the property is not owned, or if the business is going to transfer with a lease in place with the seller, you don't want to be forced to move.
Yeah, for example, if you're thinking of selling or your exit plan is to sell within the next few years, don't move the business. If you've been at a location for a long time, that's part of the goodwill that the buyer is paying for. And even if you own the real estate, you need to think about that, because actually last week we spoke to a potential seller and she owned the real estate and the business had been at that location for over 10 years and she hadn't, the real estate is for sale, and she hadn't thought about what would happen if the real estate sells and where she's going to move her business to.
Yeah, or the case where you have people that have owned their business for a long period of time and have a great relationship with their landlord, and they're paying month to month. It's a good thing to sit down with the landlord and say, hey, what would happen if we sat down and did a 3 or 5 year lease? So at least you have an idea that you can communicate to a buyer, and we can normalize the financials. Say you're paying $1,000 a month, and you find out from the landlord that in a long-term lease, you know, that they would probably be asking at $1,100 or $1,200. Well, we need to increase the cost that a buyer is going to see in that lease.
I think from the standpoint it's a little counterintuitive if on the listings and on the websites, et cetera, if the lease says month to month, the buyer perceives that as risky, that the business could be kicked out, even if you've had a long-term lease. Having a 3 to 5 year expiration on the lease or option actually brings a comfort level to the potential buyer, even if it is going to expire in the next 6 months or 12 months.
True. So we're going to talk about management, and we're going to start off by talking about what we spoke about earlier in the last segment, which was the business leaves when you go home. So if you are the main influence of income for the business, this is where you want to come back out and start delegating and elevating the employees.
Yeah, this is, we're really talking to the people that have the control freaks, and I can say that because I'm somewhat one of them. But you need to, if you're going to sell your business, you need to turn over some of the responsibilities to other employees in the business.
Empower them.
The buyer is going to see that, and they're going to get nervous that they're not going to be unable to replicate everything that you do as the owner of the business.
And it needs to be in writing. You know, a written policy and procedure manual, employee manual, is very important. That's part of the benefit that the buyer is buying of the business. So if you've been running your business, let's say 20 plus years, and you don't have a written policy and procedural manual that your employees have signed off on, or you don't have a written employee manual, it's a good time to start looking at that. There are consultants out there, firms that can facilitate that for you. But having a written, Johnny's been with you, 10 plus years. Well, now you want to make him responsible for a certain function in the business. We'll have that in writing. Get a employment agreement or a contract with them, or potentially certainly have a non-compete agreement that after the sale, they're not going to run out and open a like business across the street. That reduces, again, the risk for the buyer.
Long-term employees, that generally is a good thing. Obviously, having turnover and employee turnover is not viewed positively. But having long-term employees, and sometimes they are aware of the sales, sometimes they are not. But I think keep a professional relationship with them, and they shouldn't be your friends.
Yeah, and understand if they believe that they're the heir apparent to the business, you need to give them the first right of refusal. If you're thinking about selling the business, there's a means that you can address that without running them off. Very simply put, once you've met with a broker and you understand what the most probable selling price is and what the terms could possibly be, is approach that individual or individuals and see if they're interested in acquiring the business. And you don't necessarily need to tell them that you're going to put on the open market, but you can certainly give them the first opportunity to acquire the business, and they can only kick themselves and not be mad at you, the seller, if the business sells and they didn't acquire it.
Yeah, the usually in that case, it's more of a financing issue and having the liquidity or wherewithal to purchase the business. We just had a retail store where the employee had been there for 15 years, and the owner really wanted that that manager to purchase the business, and she just was not able to do it.
And are the employees family or friends? I mean, this is very concerning to a buyer. It's usually the service businesses, the trade specifically, that we see family members and long-term friends that are in the business. I think that there again, employee agreements and non-competes and things of that nature are vitally important when you have a key employee, and more so if it's a family member or a friend. Doug, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, one business that I spoke to had 7 family members working in the business. As a business buyer, how are you going to replace 7 family members? And not only how are you going to replace all of them, how are you going to get all of them to sign non-competes? As a business owner and you've got multiple family members working in the business, they may be, you know, director of operations or in charge of some technical aspect or service aspect of the business. They're going to have to be compensated as part of the sale in order for them to agree to a non-compete, assuming they're not an owner, but as part of the transfer of the business.
And they don't think they're an heir apparent.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so you know, you understand, are these family members or friends, can you evaluate without making disclosure, or maybe you decide you do want to make disclosure that you're selling the business and find out would they be willing to work on with a new owner? You know, you need to have a management system in place. It needs to be written. It needs to be meaningful. It needs to be measurable as well. And a lot of times, as people don't have those systems and they need to elevate and empower their employees, this is a time where you do it. You have measurable and meaningful a system put in place that's maybe tied to their compensation. And maybe you start making less money, but you have a more stable workforce that a buyer is able to come in and work on the business where you might have worked in the business more than you should have.
Absolutely. And a great example of this is a restaurant that doesn't have a point of sale system, and they still use the paper receipts, or a liquor store.
Liquor stores.
Yeah, we've had liquor stores where there was no inventory control on all of the different categories of liquor.
It was off. They swore up and down that they had a night handle on it. It was off by $80,000
at closing, and that actually was. As you can imagine, that was kind of a jolt to the whole process.
Let's talk about financials. This is where a lot of buyers and certainly lenders are going to focus. I think I had a conversation with this today with a buyer who wanted audited financials. What small businesses have audited financials? You know, that's clearly somebody from the corporate world. I've only seen one business. And that was required by the IRS to have audited financials. And there was another one that had another broker had that was required by a bank because it was a large manufacturer.
Well, a step down from audited financials is compiled, and then reviewed financials as well.
Most of what we see, I think, is reviewed. we'll talk about accrual versus cash basis. I mean, a lot of businesses, most of them small businesses, are run on a cash basis, whether or not their tax returns are accrual or cash.
By cash, do you mean how much cash is in the bank account? and most tax returns are done on a cash basis, but depending on the sophistication of the buyer, the more accurate way to look at a business is on accrual. And looking at businesses on accrual basis, you can get a better idea of the performance of the business over a certain time period.
I think the hardest one to look at is probably anything dealing with construction, because they're on a percent of completion. They get paid on a percent of completion, a third up front, a third when they start the job, and then say a third when they finish it, as an example. Those are businesses that are very difficult to look at because they have very lumpy income and expenses.
Well, maybe we should define accrual and cash for those that don't know the difference. Accrual is basically when it's earned or when it's an invoice basically is going to be paid at some point in time in the future. That goes into the financial bookkeeping system. Cash is basically when you receive it, and cash is when you pay it on the invoicing side.
Correct.
So that can be considerable in terms of a difference, especially if you've got an accounts receivable issue. So if you've got where people are slow paying you, and we're seeing actually a lot of this in oil field related businesses where we're in the Eagle Ford Shale area, and a lot of the big oil companies are slow paying their clients.
The bigger the corporation, the slower the pay, it seems to be.
Yes.
But that can kill a business, and that's for a whole other discussion about working capital. I mean, clean up your books. There's so many things that owners do that they live through the business. Taking cash draws, paying non-working family member, the cars for the four kids, the vacations. I mean, list goes on and on. That's very difficult. You can itemize that, and you can be support it and due diligence. The challenge is a lot of bank lending. They just won't recognize it.
And from year to year, in terms of cleaning up your books, make sure that you're adding things to the same ledger item. For example, if you've got advertising and you've got marketing, track them in the same way. And if you've got utilities and telephone, make sure that you're putting things in the same. And that can have an effect if you change CPAs. Because once you give your financials to the CPA and they recategorize things in a different way from one year to the next, that is something that the buyer is going to take a look at.
I guess generally speaking, that when you start your business or you turn it over from yourself to a bookkeeper, from a bookkeeper to a CPA, the ledger was set up. And they may come in and make adjustments to ledger. But by and large, what's happening at the end of the year is they're taking these ledgers items and they're condensing those into a they're condensing that down into a smaller categories, and those categories they are changes. So what sits in those categories is compounded because of how many ledger items are being created. So if you look at a 10-year-old business or the business at 20 years, there are 10 times as many ledger items, and a lot of them, when you start looking at it, are the same thing. It's just somebody just kept creating new ledger items, and it makes it very messy. Try to be consistent year to year. Certainly the last 2 to 3 years need to be consistent in your reporting.
So on the cleaning up your books, we've talked about it. Stop living out of the business. Excessive discretionary expenses coming out of your business that are being used for your personal gain is not something that's looked at positively by a buyer or a lender. So the more adjustments that you have on your financials equals a lower price, because the financing is going to be lower.
That's correct. And report the cash. Can't tell you how important that is.
like you say, if you made it once, you're not going to make it twice. So if you were pocketing the cash, which we do not encourage in any way, you need to report the income. You've made it once, you're not going to make it on your sale.
A simple example is this. We've already stated that in a previous show that the average multiple of adjusted cash flow, seller's discretionary earnings, is 2.3 times your adjusted earnings. That's across all industries for over 25 years. So let's say that I don't report that $1,000 I get from this one client every year. Well, I made that $1,000 and I didn't pay 20-whatever%, 30% tax on it, but at closing I would have gotten 2.3 times that. So it's better to report the cash, pay the tax on it, because you're going to get a much more than that at closing because of the multiple.
Absolutely. So if you are not reporting the cash, you need to start reporting the cash if you plan on selling your business in the next 1 to 3 years.
And I guess the other one is one set of books. There's the story that we've heard from other brokers where it's, I guess one of them was a donut shop and the guy had two cash registers. One was for cash and checks, and the other one was for, one was for credit cards and checks, and the other one was for cash. And only the owner managed the cash drawer. And to prove it, the seller wanted to show the buyer to come in and work in the business for today to see how many times he opened and how much cash was in that cash drawer. But it was never reported. No bank statements, nothing to support that.
Yeah. And probably the final thing before we go to break on that is keep them up to date and current. Delays in reporting your financials as part of the sales process is not a positive aspect from a buyer standpoint. So
we come back, we'll talk about inventory, accounts receivable, payable, and move on to tax returns.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Costa, host of The Costa Report, every Tuesday at 6 a.m. and again at 6 p.m. This week, my guest is outspoken former congressman and one of our country's most prominent gay public figures, Mr. Barney Frank. He'll be with us to talk about the Supreme Court's ruling on DOMA and how the Obama presidency is doing in its second term. Don't miss Barney Frank this Tuesday at 6 a.m. and again at 6 p.m. on the Voice America Business Channel.
Business brokerage is a very regional business due to the requirement of having face-to-face buyer and seller meetings. While Robert and Doug are regionally centric to South Central Texas with their brokerage company, Business Brokers of San Antonio, and their equipment appraisal company, Equipment Appraisers of San Antonio, they have also established BizBrokerTalk.com to help assist sellers and buyers with finding professionals in a variety of areas required in the business transaction process. This includes certified business brokers, SBA loan packagers, 401k conversion companies, lenders, as well as other necessary advisory sources. Whether you're selling or buying a business, you need a team of professionals on your side to guide you through the process. Visit BizBrokerTalk.com today. And if you're in the South Texas area, please visit Business Brokers of San Antonio at BBOfSA.com or Equipment Appraisers of San Antonio at EAOfSA.com.
Wealth Solutions for the 99% is a weekly talk show focused on helping you develop and execute a game plan to build wealth. Your host, Paul LaJoy, who built a $50 million plus company in less than 5 years, believes it's impossible to be poor in America, and he'll show you why with his innovative strategies. The show is upbeat, fun, and informative. Tune in every Saturday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 10 a.m. Pacific on Voice America Business.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. This is Biz Broker Talk with Robert Howells and Doug Scheiding. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or you may send an email to podcast@bizbrokertalk.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Biz Broker Talk with Robert Howells and Doug Scheiding. You can email questions to us at podcast@bizbrokertalk.com or visit our website at bizbrokertalk.com. We're discussing the preparing your business for sale, and specifically we're talking about getting closer to your balance sheet. Most small business owners do not look at their balance sheet, and if they do, it's at the end of the year when they review it with their accountant for tax purposes.
Or if they have a balance sheet, some, depending on the size of the business, they may not even have a balance sheet that they keep track of.
And there's probably three aspects of that, and it may not apply to all businesses, but there are usually three aspects to the balance sheet that affect buyers and certainly the lending process, one of which is bad inventory, having inactive inventory or inventory that is never going to sell. Get it off the books.
The inventory is typically, depending on the business, is added to the price, or a certain amount of inventory is included in the price. And so if you've got $50,000 on the balance sheet as inventory and you market it as that and right the night before closing, which is when inventory is typically done, you find out you've got $25,000, there's going to be a minus $25,000 to the purchase price.
And like Doug said, in retail specifically, you're going to have, you're buying the business plus inventory, whatever it happens to be, or restaurants, a liquor stores, anything that's inventory intensive, that's how it's purchased. You're buying the business plus the inventory. Or if it's consistent and the seller feels comfortable with it, that they're willing to, you know, eat or get paid a few thousand dollars, you can include inventory in it. But generally speaking, it's business is purchased plus inventory. And in manufacturing and construction, we see a lot of bad inventory, stuff that's obsolete, and it's basically that's on the books, sometimes for working capital purposes to secure the line of credit or working capital or a note, and it really shouldn't be on there. It needs to get off for the sale of the business, because you don't take it off, the buyer's going to take it off. And then there's AR and AP.
Yeah, keep track of your AR and don't let it go out too far as best you can.
So that's accounts receivable, what's owed to you.
And the AP the same from the standpoint
accounts
of
payable, what you owe others.
Pay the vendors.
And having an aged accounts receivable and an aged accounts payable, what's 30 days out, what's 60 days past due, what's 90 days past due, it becomes very meaningful, because how you run your business, it's going to be compared to industry trends, and lenders have access to databases that show what's the industry average.
And as part of a business transaction, and again, speaking of an asset sale, the seller generally keeps the accounts receivable, but not in all cases, because if a buyer comes in and needs that accounts receivable as working capital, they're going to take a look at the aging. And they will, because they're going to try to buy the accounts receivable.
They may discount it, though.
Yeah, exactly. They'll include it in the purchase price, but they'll discount it, especially if things are 30, 60, 90 days out, because that's less likely to be paid.
That's correct. So that brings us to tax returns. Just please make sure you got one set of tax returns, because there's a form that's typically filled out prior to closing that goes to the lender. That's the form 4506T. It's an IRS form 4506T. And what that is that it's a transcript of the prior year's tax returns, and that the lender's just simply verifying what's provided to them in due diligence matches what the seller provided to the IRS. I can't tell you how many businesses we've gone through that process and the conversation ends there, because they just can't commit to having what was gone to the IRS.
Oh, absolutely. I've not taken several listings because the seller refused to sign the 4506T. So that, to me, that meant that they weren't potentially accurately representing the business.
And do they match the P&Ls? Now, again, you may have a cash and you book things as you receive the cash, or as you actually cash leaves your account, or as an accrual basis, there may be a difference between your P&L, your profit and loss statement or income statement, and your tax return, but they should match fairly closely. If you're both on the cash basis or if they're both on the accrual basis, they should match fairly closely. There's going to be some adjustments the accountant or tax professional is going to do at the end of the year, But by and large, those should be fairly accurate, and you should be able to get those details. So again, your tax return is a summary of the financials. The income statement is a less of a summary. It has more groupings. And below that, you have your journal entries, which are could be multiple times more entries than what you see on your income statement or your profit and loss statement.
And again, just like your quarterly financials of the business, file your tax returns on a timely basis. If you're going to sell your business, you want to have your tax return done by the March 15th date, which is the corporate deadline.
And don't add in mysterious expenses in your cost of goods at the end of the year.
And yeah, because that as a business broker, that'll kill us, because from the standpoint of we have to represent what's on the tax return in the same way that we can't represent cash. And we have to follow what was reported to the IRS. So file your taxes in a timely manner. Don't file the extensions because as a buyer of the business, especially if they're going for financing, they're going to need to have the tax returns in a timely manner for the last complete year.
That's correct. And I can't tell you how many people wait till the end of the September to file their taxes for the prior year. You can't do that if you're selling the business, because it's necessary for closing.
And so get in the habit of having them filed. Because what happens is if you're in the habit of filing that extension, then the whole process is that next year you'll do the same thing.
Let's do a quick review of recasting. Recasting is what business brokers call it. Normalizing the income is what accountants call it. And there's term that you're going to hear pronounced several different ways: EBITDA, EBITDA, EBITDA. It's the earnings before interest, taxes, and depreciation. It's done.
And amortization, that's the A. That's the DA.
Yeah. That is done to be able to compare apples to apples. Doug may own a business, and I may own the same like business in town. I may have 90% of my business finance, and his is paid off. Well, guess what? He doesn't have interest, and I have interest. His business is already depreciated. I've got all sorts of depreciation in mind. So if you add those things back, you come to a more stable number, and it does several things. It allows comparables to be done. The first of which is the broker can go out and look at market comparables based on EBITDA or EBITDA. Lenders like looking at that, what they call it net earnings. It's the earnings before these taxes, depreciation, and amortization.
Exactly. We talked about this some in last week's show, but the SDE or cash flow, the seller's discretionary earnings or cash flow of the business, and in the same way that the EBITDA earnings is done to look at businesses on a apples to apples basis, so is the SDE or cash flow. And from a formula standpoint, that's basically just your net income plus your EBITDA adjustments, your owner's salary. What I pay myself may be different than what Bob pays himself for the same business, so you adjust that back. Any discretionary expenses, as we talked about earlier, in terms of making sure your business is cleaning up the financials and stop living out of the business, you want to have as few of those as possible, and any one-time expenses. So that's basically how the SDE or cash flow is devised.
So if you buy a capital goods once every 7 or 8, 10 years, that's not a reoccurring expense, and so that would get added back. To replace the roof on the business or AC unit, it's thousands and thousands of dollars. Well, that's a non-recurring expense. That gets added back because you're trying to show what that adjusted earning is, and a lot of people have a real hard time understanding that. If it's not a reoccurring expense and they have that spike in that 1 year, it offsets how you're going to be able to do market comparables. You have to add back the one-time expense. You have to add back a one working owner.
That's actually a great point, because if a couple owns a business, mm-hmm. we will only recast to one working owner. Mm-hmm. Even if both the husband and wife are getting paid, what we will do is, and this is the accepted practice in business brokerage, is add back to the one working owner, and you put a fair market value salary in for either the husband or the wife.
So let's say a owner and their spouse are each being paid $100,000 each. fair market value for what the spouse does in the business is $50,000. If they were to move to Tahiti, they would have to pay somebody to do that spouse's job $50,000. So you're adding back $150,000 to the cash flow, or in other words, you're subtracting out $50,000 of what an owner would net because they're having to pay for the other working owner. Supportable add backs. It has to be verifiable and supportable. You need to have receipts for that one-time expense. You need to have the lease or the payments that went for the owner's vehicle and the gas that was being expensed, or the payroll for the non-working kid, or whatever the case may be. It needs to be verifiable, supportable, typically for a 3 to 5 year period, depending on the type of lending that the buyer engages in.
And this is so important. We've mentioned the IBBA, or International Business Brokers Association. There's a 2-day course, as we mentioned last week, that basically goes over how financials are recasted and normalized as part of a standard business brokerage process, which goes to getting a certified business intermediary that's familiar with this, because this is how banks look at it. This is how valuation companies look at the financials.
Correct. And too many is too low value. More add backs you have, I would say less than 10 is where you want to be. The lower the better. Five or six is probably normal for owner operated business, privately held business. 10 is about as far as I'd like to push them. But it just depends on how you've lived through the business. And end of the day, there's the buyer sanity check. You know, the cash flow of the business has to support a buyer's living wage. It's got to support the debt service of acquiring the business. And you need to have about 30% left over to reinvest into the business for working capital, what they call a coverage ratio. Business valuations. I can tell you that it's not always necessary. We like to see business valuations on businesses that are
Over $1 million, certainly.
Yeah. Sellers, if there's multiple owners of the business and they can't agree on the sale price, even after we've provided them our opinion through our market comparables, that needs to go out. If it's divorce or partnership breakup, a lot of times those are going to require, for legal reasons, a third-party certified USPAP business valuation.
It's something to think about as well, because depending on if you get a valuation before you go to market, one of the things to consider is that it's not assignable. If there's a lender involved, they are going to have to use a different business valuation company or individual than what was done prior to listing.
So not all businesses need a business valuation. You know, visit with your broker. You may need a real estate appraisal if you're going to sell a real estate. And if it's capital intensive, you may want to get a machinery and equipment appraisal to understand what the fair market value or fair market value continued use is, so that you can include that. It's not book value. It's not what it's depreciated down to on your book. It's what the fair market value of it, what you would buy it from Joe across the street in its current condition without delivery and without installation additional charges, what you'd buy in its current condition sitting there today. That's the value that two parties can agree to without duress. That's fair market value.
And make sure it's a third-party arm's length valuation that's done by an independent person, not the broker.
A certified
And not your CPA.
Not the CPA, not the broker. You can always get a broker's pricing opinion or the data method.
Well, we're coming to the end of the show today, so let's spend a few minutes on why should you do all this in preparing your business for sale.
Well, the business is typically the largest asset of an owner. I mean, it's their retirement. It's their nest egg. It's their cash-ginning machine. It's their cash cow. It's what's gotten them this far.
Golden goose.
It's used sometimes, a lot of times, it's valued more than the owner's home. It's the largest investment. And great care and diligence needs to be given in the sale of that business for both the sake of the transaction and for the benefit of the seller. And sometimes these things take years to do.
And typically the you sell your business once, and 90% of the time, it's your first time to sell a business. So if you're going to do that, you need to plan and prepare, as we said, 1 to 3 years in advance. And
90% of business transactions are first-time sellers.
Are first-time sellers, exactly. And they typically only do it once.
It's a lot different process of selling your business than running it or starting it up. It's a completely different process. And on average, through all industries, businesses transfer 2.3 times sales discretionary earnings. That means that some businesses are sold at 1 times adjusted earnings. Some businesses sold at 5 times or more. So you need to look at what your specific industry is and what your adjusted earnings are before you can be able to determine what yours. But across all industries, it is 2.3 times.
And so in the end, you'll get higher value at the time of sale if you do planning and preparation.
And it makes buyer financing easier. If you've prepared your business for sale, it's going to make it a lot easier on the buyer to obtain financing, and less a chance that the seller is going to end up financing the transaction. And it builds trust in the due diligence process, makes it a whole lot easier, makes it a shorter time to investigate the representations of the seller, and you're going to get a higher value for it at the time of the sale. I'll never forget that we've been told multiple times when you go in to talk to a seller, the three things that we typically get told: I want $1 million for my business.
$1 million. It's always $1 million.
It's $1 million. I don't care who buys it, and I'm not taking a note. Let's break that down.
Well, we'll discuss that further in some of the myths of those types of impressions that a seller has. So,
all right. Well, thank you for joining us today. When we come back next week, we're going to talk about buying a business.
And the whole sales process of what we alluded to last week is our 10-step process, and we'll talk about that in more
detail.
Do
the process and buying a business. Thank you for your time.
Thank you again for joining us today for Biz Broker Talk. Please join Robert and Doug again next Tuesday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. After today's show, we hope you are one step closer to a successful sale of your business.
The information and ideas provided within the show are intended for educational purposes only and not intended as investment advice. The hosts of this show do not provide legal or tax advice. You should consult with your tax or legal professional regarding your individual situation. No information should be interpreted as securities advice. With regard to your particular investments and financial strategies, consult your financial planner, CPA, investment professionals. While we have endeavored to ensure the accuracy of all the information in this program, we do not guarantee or give any warranty as to the accuracy, timeliness, or completeness of any information.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.